BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, we have seen many things unfold in 2020, many just never dreamed possible in our constitutional republic. Consider the dictatorial powers that we've seen launched by many governors and mayors across the nation, the shuttering of churches, the closing of businesses, the declaration of what businesses can survive and which ones are doomed to fold. But not only this, look at the uprisings taking place in cities across the nation. While destruction, burnings, lootings, murders, and physical assaults have significantly escalated this year, many of the major media continue to refer to them as just being peaceful protest. Meanwhile, the tensions between people are heightening. People have been assaulted for an article of clothing that they're wearing or a flag that they are waving. Attacks against patriotism are escalating. Even the professional sports world has joined in the attack and have caved to a political agenda that glorifies anarchy. There's a war on police, with many calling for their defunding and to reimagine policing. Where's all this headed? Our guest today has written that the elements of revolution are all in place, including an election from which there could be no turning back. Joining us today, we welcome Don Fetter. Don is a writer, he's a researcher, a columnist. He is a Boston Herald editorial writer and syndicated columnist for 19 years. More than 40 newspapers and e-magazines picked up his writings. His writings have also appeared in the Washington Times, Weekly Standard, Front Page Magazine, Human Events, and many, many others. Since 2002, he has served as a communications consultant, writer, and conference organizer for various pro-life and pro-family NGOs. He's helped to organize the World Congress of Families from 2006 to 18. He's currently the Coalition's director and director of communications for the Ruth Institute and is a recipient of numerous awards. Don, welcome here to Crosstalk.
Thank you very much.
Don, you report on a recent poll that indicated 61% of Americans said we're on the verge of civil war. And you've indicated that instead of civil war, you believe a revolution is afoot. And before we develop that topic itself, describe, if you would, for our listeners, the difference between a civil war and a revolution.
Certainly. In a civil war, there are two sides fighting. In a revolution, there's basically one side trying to usurp the government. I think that's the situation we have here. I honestly don't want to see a civil war. I don't want to see, you know, the right and left duking it out in the streets, if you will. But I think the situation we have now, Jim, as you suggested, is something quite different. It's more a power grab rather than, you know, two sides contesting for power.
Mm-hmm. This revolution you refer to is not something that just came about from someone saying, hey, it's 2020, let's have a revolution this year. Rather, there are seeds that have been planted sometime back that are starting to take root as to where we are today. If you would, Don, just take us back. What are those seeds that have been planted that we're starting to see the growth take place here today?
If you wanted to, Jim, you could look back to the French Revolution, and then, of course, the Bolshevik Revolution, Antonio Gramsci and cultural Marxism, you know, on to the communist revolutions of the 20th and 21st centuries.
Hmm.
You know, we've seen this all before. We saw it in Venezuela, for instance. You know, a group of people came to power. Initially, they were elected, and then they decided that they'd had enough of elections and democracy, representative government, and they decided to hold power and essentially beat anyone who disagreed with them. The thing that came to mind recently, Jim, and I hope I'm not talking too much now.
No, you're fine.
I saw one of my favorite movies that came out recently, Darkest Hour, about Winston Churchill in 1940, and there was a push, of course, to get Britain, after the fall of France, there was a push to get Britain to negotiate with Germany, with the Nazis. And I was thinking about how the Nazis came to power. You had a situation that is very similar to what you have today, where you had riots, you had anarchy in the streets, you know, people being beaten, being killed for having the wrong point of view. And then, of course, along came Hitler. Many viewed him as the savior, even though his National Socialist Party didn't get a majority in the 1932 election. It was only a plurality. Still, people were tired of the anarchy, and they said, you know, Hitler seems like a strong guy, tough-minded. Let's see what he can do. And, of course, we all saw what he did. And, you know, it's probably the most ironical thing about this year, and there are so many ironies, as you mentioned, Jim, is the fact that this organization, Antifa, is supposed to be anti-fascist. They're the most fascist political movement we have ever seen in this country.
Yes, yes. And you've gone back and you've looked at what, you know, the Great Depression from the 30s, civil rights issues going on in the 60s. And you say that these events were only sparks that never ignited, but what was kindled decades ago has now burst into flame. So bridge these together for us, if you would.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I was there in the 1960s. I was a college student. I went to college and law school in the 60s and early 70s. I was a campus conservative activist. So I, you know, I saw the New Left, Progressive Labor Party, the SDS revolt at the time, and then, of course, as a student of history, I know what happened in the 1930s, and a lot of people thought of the 1930s because, oh, gosh, a quarter of the country was unemployed, that there was going to be a revolution. In the 1960s, with what was going on in the anti-Vietnam war, anti-Vietnam movement, many people thought that we'd be fighting on the barricades in a few years. I was one of them, by the way. That didn't happen. But there's just a different dynamic now. You know, you asked me to go back to the beginning, and if you wanted to, you could trace it all the way back to the French Revolution.
What unfolded there? What is it that you see as being the very seed here that got things going?
You know, again, violence. Violence that was used as a deliberate political tactic. You know, you had the revolutionaries, the Jacobins and other factions rioting in the streets, seizing power when and where they could. The king, Louis XVI, who ended up being beheaded, making concession after concession, and finally, gradually, the radicals took power in France, and we saw what came of that, eventually the Reign of Terror. By the way, there were also, in all of these revolutions, Jim, there were attacks on religion, and that's part of it as well. And then, of course, you had the Bolshevik Revolution, somewhat similar circumstance. There you had a nation convulsed by war, and, you know, the Bolsheviks weren't elected by anyone. They seized power. You know, the Kerensky government, which was essentially Menshevik, was elected to rule the country. And then, of course, the Bolsheviks ousted them. Again, violence in the streets, seizing power at the point of a gun. And, you know, the result was 70 years of communism. And then, of course, you had the violence of the 1960s. Part of the problem is not just violence, but it's legitimizing violence. How long did it take Joe Biden to condemn the violence that had been going on for months in cities like Portland and Seattle and Chicago and Washington, D.C.? Basically, it wasn't until the polls turned against him.
Yeah.
That he began to speak out, and even then he did it in an equivocal manner. You know, rather than condemning Antifa and Black Lives Matters, the people who were really behind the rioting and the insurrection, he said he condemned all violence, and he talked about white supremacists, you know, like white supremacists are rioting in downtown Portland. But part of the problem has been legitimizing violence, you know, calling looters and rioters protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, Jim, that goes on all the time in
yes.
the media.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, as I tried to explain in the commentary that you mentioned, the elements are all in place.
Mm-hmm.
Delegitimizing authority, legitimizing violence in the streets, attacks on the police, defund the police, efforts to hamstring the police. One party firmly in the grasp of radicals, radicals controlling the engines of culture in this country.
Something that's important, and you point out as well, and you mentioned this list of cities, Minneapolis and Portland, D.C., Seattle, New York City, Chicago, Kenosha, and even recently in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Many people look at these, these are just isolated incidents, but they're not. They are really all connected, are they not?
They are, and now they're planning to bring this violence into the suburbs. You know, sort of mission creep, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We start with the major cities, and then when we've beaten people into submission there, then we move on to the suburbs and the small towns. So if it's not quite there yet, it's coming.
You write a very concerning statement. You state this, Don: the goal is chaos, leading to uncertainty, apprehension, and politicians willing to give the terrorist whatever they want to buy peace. Comment on that.
Sure. Well, again, if you want to look back in history, this is what happened in France in 1789. It's what happened in Germany leading up to the election of 1932. And it's, you know, it's happened all over the world in the last 50 years or 70 years since the end of World War II. Anarchy, chaos, you know, and when people, especially middle-class people, aren't used to this. And when there's chaos, they look around frantically for someone to save them. And oftentimes, they choose the wrong person. You know, that happened in 1932 with Hitler. It happened with the Bolsheviks in 1917. You know, the people in power ceded power to them. As I mentioned before, Jim, in the 1932 election, the National Socialists didn't get a majority. They got a plurality. Hindenburg was persuaded to make Hitler chancellor. That was the last free election.
Don Federer is our guest here today on Crosstalk. His column, The Elements of Revolution, are all in place, including an election from which there could be no turning back. We're going to pick up our discussion after the break, focusing in the impact that 2020 has had on law enforcement. Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what are comets made of?
Chris, comets are sometimes referred to as dirty snowballs. They're mainly ice, but with a lot of solid particles mixed in. As the comet goes around the sun, the solar heat and solar wind vaporize part of the comet, and we see the tail as those particles are stripped away. Now we find that sometimes not only is the tail stripped away, but sometimes the head is lopped off, speeding up the comet's disintegration. Obviously, comets can't last too long. Thus, they are a strong sign of a recently created universe. The Bible refers to these comets as wandering stars that don't follow the standard motion of the stars or the planets. They were created on day 4 of creation week, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and folks, what we're trying to do today is open your eyes to what is unfolding here in our culture today, and these are just not isolated things that are happening here and there, and campaigns saying this and saying that, and what's happening in Seattle is not related to what's going on in Portland or in Chicago, but folks, there's an interconnectedness to all of this, and the destruction, the burning, the looting, the physical assaults, we're entering certainly a time of lawlessness. Doesn't Scripture talk about that? Every man doing that which is right in his own eyes? And we are seeing that unfold before us here today. We're seeing the impact of Antifa and yes, the seeds of Black Lives Matter, who, again, one of the co-founders saying that we are trained Marxists. So, folks, the things that are unfolding this year are not by accident, but by design, that have been in the making. With us today is Don Fetter. Don has written columns for many, many years for the Boston Herald for some 19 years, 40 papers and e-magazines picking up those, and writing for many other such publications today, including Front Page Magazine, Human Events, and others. And we're discussing a recent column that he wrote, The Elements of Revolution Are All in Place, including an election from which there can be no turning back. Don, I'd like to look at the impact that we have seen on law enforcement, because we have seen the impact upon law enforcement. I mean, you write of a connectedness, saying that crippling law enforcement is an all-important step on the road to revolution. And I really believe this is critical for the American people to understand. Are you with us, Don?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I was trying to marshal my thoughts.
Oh, okay.
The police are far more important than the military domestically. Unless the National Guard is called out, you don't have troops in the streets. What you have are policemen. And if the police aren't there, if they're demoralized, if they're underfunded, if they're defunded, then there's no one to protect us from the revolution, which, of course, is what the revolution wants. It's intentional. And of course, you've seen record numbers of police officers hurt in rioting. I think in New York City, almost 400 police officers were injured seriously enough to go to the hospital. You have policemen who were near retirement taking retirement. You have others simply quitting. How many chiefs of police have quit? The chief of police in Seattle, who is a black woman, and tough-minded, serious, and very professional, quit. She was just disgusted by the fact that the mayor wouldn't support her, wouldn't support members of her force. The demoralization of the police, undercutting the police, hamstringing the police to an extent. Mm-hmm. This is also an important part of the revolution.
And we're seeing its enactment in cities all across this nation. I mean, when you're pulling out, $1 billion in funding from New York City, it's got to have an impact.
Of course it does. And de Blasio is one of the furthest left mayors in the country. And that's saying a lot, considering the fact that he's competing with people like Ted Wheeler, for instance. And the mayor of Chicago and the mayor of Seattle and San Francisco, he never liked the police. You know what I think is to an extent is a giveaway, Jim. Every police union that I'm aware of that's taken an official position has endorsed the president's reelection. And these are in cities like New York, where police unions never endorse a Republican.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're so desperate that they're doing that they're endorsing the these are unions in many cases that endorsed Clinton, that endorsed Obama, in some cases endorsed Hillary. I think the New York Police Union, the last time they took an official position, endorsed Hillary Clinton when she ran against President Trump in 2016. And suddenly they're all endorsing the president because they know that he's the only one who can he's the only one who supports them, who has their back, if you will.
He was just endorsed last week by the Latino Police Association.
Yeah. I think, by the way, one of the big surprises in the election, Jim, is going to be the number of black and the number of Hispanic voters who end up casting their ballots for Trump. You know, they talk back in the 1960s, we used to talk about the two Americas, the haves and the have-nots. Today, to a large extent, you have two black communities. You have the black community that has assimilated into the middle class, that works hard, that, you know, wants an opportunity to be part of the American dream. And then, of course, you have the black community that is, you know, part of Black Lives Matter.
We talk about mayors being complicit with this crippling of law enforcement, and there are many illustrations of that. But I'd like to also talk about the money flow to these cities. Many of these cities are demanding that the federal government just send more money, give us more money. This is even what it's part of a disagreement between the Pelosi House and the White House, as it appears we're just in the COVID response and the funding of cities and so forth. But, Don, it appears that we're just funding our own destruction. Am I overplaying that?
No, not at all. And you have federal courts that have said that the administration has to give these cities money. It doesn't matter that they're not. I mean, what's the first responsibility of government, Jim? It's to maintain order.
Mm-hmm.
It's to protect the lives and property of citizens. That's how government started in the first place, thousands of years ago. So you have cities that allow rioting, that allow looting, that in some cases allow murder, that won't call out the National Guard, that won't allow the police to use tear gas to dispel mobs. The administration says, well, we're not going to subsidize this. And some federal courts are saying, you have to. It's unconstitutional to withhold your support from these cities.
Don Feder with us here today. We've got many issues to talk about, but I'm going to throw another one into the works here, and that is George Soros. And we understand that through his political action committees in recent years that he has really focused in on putting money into races of local district attorneys. That's not by accident, is it?
No, not at all. And, you know, in a way, I think George Soros is evil. But he's an evil genius. He knew exactly where his money would have the most impact. Not on funding congressional campaigns, not on funding campaigns for governor, or even the state legislature, but electing leftists as prosecutors. He did that with one example, Kimberly Gardner. She's called the St. Louis City Attorney. She's in fact the local prosecutor. He gave her campaign $190,000 the first time she was elected. When she ran for re-election, he gave her campaign $119,000. It's hard to imagine someone worse than Kimberly Gardner in public office in that position. She's refused to prosecute rioters. She's prosecuting that couple in Seattle, in St. Louis.
St. Louis. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that held guns in an effort to keep rioters from running over their property. They're
protecting their own property, yeah.
Exactly. She prosecutes the people who were protecting their property, not the people who want to take their property.
This is amazing. You've got a subtitle to this article. The elements of revolution are all in place, and you've added the words, including an election from which there can be no turning back. That's something you firmly believe in.
Yes, it is. The Democrats have essentially told you what they're going to do if they get in power. They're going to pack the courts. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to expand the Supreme Court. Who knows, maybe you'll have Chief Justice Hillary Clinton if Biden is elected in November. And Biden, by the way, refuses to disavow that. He says that voters don't have any right to know what his position is on packing the court.
Right.
So, yeah, packing the court, they're talking about making the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico states, giving them two senators, and I don't know how many representatives, even though, by the way, it's unconstitutional. To make that you need a constitutional amendment to make the District of Columbia state, but still, that's what they're talking about doing. If Puerto Rico and D.C. become states, given their propensity to vote for the Democratic Party, if they can pack the courts, if they can eliminate any border security, bring in hordes of illegal aliens, this will be the last free election. I don't want to sound alarmist, and I'm sorry if I do, but honestly, this is what we're confronting.
You end your article with this statement, "Don't think civil war, think firing squads, gulags, and death camps. Think the Black Lives Matter flag flying over the White House and Capitol." Don, a person who's not been impacted by that statement and even our interview today, they really ought to check their pulse.
Yeah, they should. And they should also, you know, they should also read a bit of history. I don't think most Americans don't know very much about the Second World War. And many people under 40 don't even know which sides were fighting in the Second World War. They don't know who was fighting for Germany, and they don't know who was fighting for America. But most people don't know how close the Nazis came to winning in the Second World War. You know, I mentioned Winston Churchill in 1940. Britain was fighting by itself at that point. America hadn't entered the war. This was a year and a half before Pearl Harbor. France had been defeated. Most of the European powers had been defeated. Russia was involved in a life and death struggle. And there was Britain, and a large part of the political class in Britain wanted negotiations. They wanted peace. They wanted a negotiated settlement. And you know, people look back and they say, "Well, I mean, the Nazis. Who could be worse than the Nazis?" And yet, you know, America didn't want to fight at that point. Britain wanted to surrender, except for Churchill and the people who supported him. You know, Europe had essentially been defeated. I said Russia was fighting for its life. It wasn't at that point. That was before the German invasion of Russia. Germany and Russia decided to carve up Europe, which they did. I look at the situation today, you know, I look at the campaign and I say, how on earth could people, normal people, regardless of their race or their political affiliation, even think of voting for Biden? And yet they do, if the polls are correct.
We've got to take a break here. Don Federer is our guest. We're going to come back for just a little bit more discussion here, because we're going to probe him on the Second Amendment and this issue about the taking away of guns and the history of that as well. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
How can three persons be one God? Does the Bible support slavery? Is homosexuality acceptable to God? Is it okay for Christians to get hypnotized? Is suicide an unforgivable sin? How can I talk to a Muslim about Jesus? Why was Abel's offering accepted by God when Cain's was rejected? Hundreds of questions just like these are addressed in The Big Book of Bible Answers by respected Bible scholar Ron Rhodes. Consisting of over 400 pages, Ron addresses some of the most common questions about the Bible, about God, Jesus, humanity, salvation, angels and demons, prophecy, the afterlife, ethics, and apologetic issues with clear, concise answers. The Big Book of Bible Answers is available from BCY for a donation of just $17 or more. Simply request it with your donation when you call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Don Federer is our guest. Again, that's Federer, not Federer. Lord willing, tomorrow Bill Federer will be with us. But this is Don Federer writing, "The elements of revolution are all in place, including an election from which there could be no turning back." And Don, by the way, folks, you can read so many of his columns at frontpagemag.com, frontpagemag.com. I'd like to bring the Second Amendment into our discussion here as well, because, I mean, you to use the term a revolution, don't think of this Civil War, think of this as revolution. And at battle right now, as you know, even in this presidential election, is where do we go on the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution? I mean, the respect for the Second Amendment greatly differs between the two major candidates.
Yes, it does. Joe Biden may be the first major party candidate who said that he will confiscate guns, not all guns, but assault weapons. And, of course, there's no definition of assault weapon. It can be almost anything. But he said that he's going to put Beto O'Rourke in charge of his so-called gun control policy, which would actually be a gun confiscation policy. You know, in the past I've written commentaries about firearms ownership, and I think that there are something like 100 million or 150 million firearms in private hands in this country. You know what? I sleep better knowing that. I mean, if we don't have the police, how are we going to protect our lives, our families? If not the police, and if not private gun ownership, what then?
Yeah. It's a very interesting statement that you mentioned with that. And I remember some time ago, Sheriff David Clark, and he was our Milwaukee County Sheriff, and I just quickly pulled up this clip. Here's what he had to say.
"I'm Sheriff David Clark, and I want to talk to you about something personal, your safety. It's no longer a spectator sport. I need you in the game. But are you ready? With officers laid off and furloughed, simply calling 911 and waiting is no longer your best option. You can beg for mercy from a violent criminal, hide under the bed, or you can fight back. But are you prepared? Consider taking a certified safety course in handling a firearm so you can defend yourself until we get there. You have a duty to protect yourself and your family. We're partners now. Can I count on you?"
This safety message brought to you by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office.
That was former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, and this is a few years back, but it's only intensified at this point.
Well, he's absolutely right. You talk to any cop off the record, you talk to any retired cop, and they'll tell you exactly the same thing. If you don't have a firearm, you'd better get one. Learn how to use it, by all means. Get it legally. If you need a license, get a license. If it needs to be registered, then go through the process of registration. I have a brother-in-law who's a retired police officer. He was a sergeant when he retired. You know, he's not alarmist. He's responsible. And, you know, he said to me many times, you know, "Don, you have to own a firearm."
Friends, we're going to open our phone lines here today. If you have a brief comment, and a brief comment or a question you'd like to ask of our guest, our number 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Don Federer is with us. The elements of revolution are all in place. While you're calling, I'd like to ask an additional question here, Don, and that deals with a statement you made early in the interview. When you talked about in revolution scenarios, and we've seen, you know, through the times of Hitler, you mentioned the term attack on religion, attack on religion. Break that down a little bit further for us, if you would.
I think a lot of people are missing that. You know, they tried it early on in one of the riots in Washington. They tried to firebomb what's called the Cathedral of the Presidents. It's a Protestant church. I don't recall the denomination. But It's not just secular statues that are being attacked. People have gone into churches and attacked religious symbols. They've attacked in Catholic churches. They've attacked statues of saints. Black Lives Matters. They took this post off. Maybe they were getting too much heat from it, but initially they said on their website that, you know, that that we seek to delegitimize the family, the nuclear family,
yep,
and also traditional religion. So this is part of their program, and of course it goes back to Antonio Gramsci, the father of cultural Marxism in the 1920s, who said the two bulwarks to revolution are the family and the church. You eliminate the family and the church, it will be much easier for revolutions to succeed.
My.
So, you know, you can, this is also part of the revolution, attacks on religion.
And folks, all the attacks, even coming on with COVID, this is all interwoven together. Please understand that. This is all interwoven together. And when you have the leadership from New York talk about closing down synagogues, and that happened just recently, where they show this picture from years ago, but using it as a current illustration that, no, we have to be more socially distant, where I'm going to close down synagogues and churches. And the folks, we see what is taking place in this. I mean, right away, churches were targeted by this whole COVID thing, but it's all interconnected with this matter of revolution. It all fits together here, Don.
Jim, you said it much better than I could. Yes, that's absolutely right. And, you know, again, another irony, you have mass ceremonies, if I can call them that, by Muslims. And the mayor of New York doesn't criticize them. He doesn't talk about shutting down the mosques. But he knows that Orthodox Jews tend to vote Republican, especially Hasidic Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones who are being targeted.
Yeah. Phone lines are packed. We're going to begin with Joe in New Mexico. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. We see more and more of the attacks on pretty much started on one sector of Christianity, and now it's pretty much on all religions, of what I see on TV. And like your guest says, even on the Orthodox Jews and Catholicism. So it's like they have a problem with religion, Christianity in general. And I think that's pretty sad, because that's labeling everybody that's not with him being against him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and of course that involves, you know, evangelicals, and now it's even, like he says, they're bringing down statues and everything.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to join forces through all our universal prayer and some fasting. And
Joe, thank you so much. Yeah, prayer and fasting is so critical in all of this. And I just echo the attack that's going on against religion in so many different fronts. We're seeing that take place. You've witnessed it, and we are witnessing this across the nation. And again, it's not by accident. And I hearken to another issue here, Don, and that is the wildfires in California. I mean, just a week or so ago, it was groups coming out saying that white evangelicals are the ones responsible for these wildfires, because they tend to be science deniers. And science deniers don't think in man-made global climate change. So therefore, white evangelicals are responsible for these wildfires. I mean, the attacks are just endless.
You know, it's like, is there anything you're not going to blame us for?
Yeah.
Actually, it's Democratic administrations in the state, including the last three governors, who didn't want to spend enough money on forest management. I mean, there have been wildfires in California, mm-hmm, as long as anyone can remember. Not as bad as the ones you've had lately. You know, the left says global warming. It's really a matter of, you know, progressives who don't want to spend the money they should be spending on forest management, you know, cutting down dead trees, assuring that there's a proper distance between trees. It's that far more than anything else. You know, they wanted to, you know, it's like de Blasio in New York. He wants to take the money from police budgets and use it on social spending.
Yeah.
And, you know, governors in California have been, for years, for decades, they've been robbing funds set aside for forest management.
Let's get to Andrew in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. And I want you to know I'm excited about this segment with Mr. Federer, and I just commend him for his scholarship particularly with this history, and I've been listening to it mentioned about the election and the chaos and all of that. And, you know, it's just spot on is the best I can say for it, because I've been reading about it a lot lately. I have a book in my lap out of my car right now on the history of the SS.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody has aptly said that if we fail to learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
And you can see it all over the place, just like then. When you turn on the media, like Netflix, some of that,
yeah,
it's got Joseph Goebbels propaganda footprints all over it.
Yeah.
And model it after that.
Thank you, Andrew. And we're seeing a rewriting of history. Matter of fact, with Bill Federer, we're going to go launch more into the education aspect of what we're seeing on with socialism as well. But again, it's all tied together, is it not, Don?
It is. And, you know, I think Bill Federer, who truly is a scholar of history, will help to put this in perspective. The gentleman who was just on talked about a book he's reading on the SS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, prior to the Nazis coming to power, they were the brown shirts. The brown shirts were the street fighters. You know, they were the thugs creating chaos in the streets of Germany. After the Nazis came to power, they didn't need brown shirts anymore. The brown shirts became the SS. So guess what's going to happen in this country if we allow the revolution to succeed?
Andrew, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Terry in Milwaukee. You're on the air, Terry.
Hi. I have so many things I'd like to touch on, but she, like you said, just to touch briefly, because I heard your speaker talk about Black Lives Matter and the athletes wanting to advocate some of this anarchy. It's so misunderstood, which is so annoying, because there's havoc out here. But no one wants to be completely eliminate the police, but they do have to be held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
It is so many racist cops that or white supremacists that have infiltrated the army, the police department, the sheriff's department, and they get to take out their hate on people of color. And if we have continue to have rogue cops, it's going to be escalated anarchy. We need the police. I never understood them to say not to have police at all.
Mm-hmm.
It'd really be anarchy. But to get rid of the rogue cops would almost be impossible, because they can hide. It's not like a person of color. You see who they are.
Okay.
Terry,
I'm
going to
we're near a break.
We're
near a break, Terry, and I want our guests to get a response and before the break happens. Thank you for the call and raising that.
You know, I think that this idea of white supremacists infiltrating the police forces is paranoia. I mean, obviously, they're bad cops. They're cops who are sadistic. They're cops who are brutal. They're cops who think they're the law. And, you know, if a cop steps out of line, if he breaks the law, then he has to be held accountable for that. I don't know anybody on my side who would disagree with it.
Thank you for the call, raising the issue here, Terry, as we deal with the issue of defunding versus accountability. But we'll be back in just 1 minute with more of your calls. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. America is under attack from insurgents. These insurgents are ultimately about revolution, not elections. These insurgents could use pre- and post-election protests to hide their attacks within. They could use the media's explanation of protest and violence as their cover. They could use the distraction of protest and violence to cover their own violence. They could use protest and violence as an opportunity to stage attacks while police and government are distracted. They could use terrorist attacks to look like Islamic terrorist attacks, or the Islamists could use the terrorist attacks to look like Marxist or anarchist terrorist attacks. They could pose as Trump supporters and carry out violence in order to incite the left to attack the right. They could carry out staged attacks on police and politicians and judges and personalities that are conservative. And they could then attack our critical infrastructure to create riots and looting to overwhelm police departments to carry out more attacks. What people need to understand is these insurgents have been trained in guerrilla warfare and propaganda, and now they're ready.
Thank you.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Don Federer is our guest today, a writer, researcher, columnist as well. And you'll read his columns at frontpagemag.com. Column we're discussing today is entitled "The Elements of Revolution Are All in Place," including an election from which there could be no turning back. We're going right back to the phone lines. John is calling from Milwaukee. John, you're on the air.
Yes, good. Hello. A couple of years ago, Pelosi pulled in members of the, quote, squad, unquote, to rein them in. This year, it was Bernie. Bernie was leading. Then they bring in Biden to knock Bernie out. Now you have Bernie 2.0. How did we get to this point? Thank you.
Thank you for that. And Don, we'll have you respond. We even have Bernie and Biden that you know, formed this common, like, platform together as well.
Well, to an extent, these are pieces on a board. If one piece doesn't work, you eliminate him and you bring in another piece. Obviously, they couldn't. The Democratic leadership was savvy enough to understand that they couldn't elect Bernie Sanders. And the only one who could defeat him was Joe Biden. And that's why they all got behind Joe Biden. That's why they forced all of the other candidates to drop out of the race. But your caller is right. Biden has become Bernie 2.0.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, now we're told that Andrew Cuomo is a possibility for Attorney General of the United States. Bernie is talking about, his elevated position that he would have if the Senate turns over as well. This is going to be a totally, totally different America.
It will. It will. You know, a frightening place. But then, you know, we deal with the situation at hand. As someone much wiser than I once said, you don't get to pick the times you're born in.
Yeah.
What you do, though, is try to make the best of it, because you were put here for a reason, as the Bible says, for times such as these.
Yes, yes. James in Tomah, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that, you know, people aren't as safe as they think they are, you know, just because you live in a small town. In some small towns, and I'm not going to mention which ones, people outside the community have been seen walking up and down the streets, video recording things with their phones, and they don't talk to anybody, just come record things, and then they walk away.
Yeah.
Am I still on?
Yeah, very quickly to your point here, Gina. Anything beyond what you said?
Okay. These people are being bussed into our cities, our towns. And, you know, some of them aren't hiding, but most of them are just in amongst us as ordinary people.
Okay, thank you, James. I'm going to have our guest comment. Small towns, rural America. You mentioned earlier, Don, that we've talked about some of the big cities. Suburbs is a goal here as well. What about rural America?
Well, of course, wherever they have a toehold, and a toehold doesn't mean very much. By the way, after riots in Milwaukee and a number of other cities, the police have said, gee, there were a lot of out-of-state license plates on the streets before the rioting started. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. Richard, in Washington, you're on the air.
Well, no, I disagree with your guest, I'm sorry to say, because normally I agree with you people about 99%.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, it's very simple to stop what's going on. Force. We have the force, and we can use overwhelming force, and then there's no problem. In the state of Washington, we had a small town, and they got word that the radicals were coming there. The sheriff and the chief of police in the town called up the hunters and stuff, and he said, show up in Main Street with your weapons. They did. When the radicals arrived and they saw what was going on, they moved on. The problem is, in Seattle, the mayor and the governor of Washington are extreme left-wing weaklings, and they are accommodating the radicals.
Well, Richard, I don't see anything that our guest has said contradicts, where you're coming from.
He hasn't talked about the first thing. He didn't talk about the 60s.
Well, we did in brief, but we talked about the 30s, the 60s, and even things prior to that.
But I'm telling you what went on. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, yeah. Mario Savio, who later on admitted he was a communist, it was the free speech movement at Berkeley that started. And because it was weaklings at Berkeley, they didn't oppose them. They let them go.
Well, and I'm interrupting you only because we've got only 2 minutes left in the program, and I want to give our guests time to speak. But what you're saying is, Don, you've not contradicted that at all.
No, no. If I was a mayor and there was a situation, the God of Hand, there was looting and there was rioting, I would tell the police to do whatever they could to contain it. If the police couldn't, then I would ask the governor to call in the National Guard.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's just common sense. You know, Napoleon said that the French Revolution could have stopped when radicals tried to storm the Bastille. He said that all Louis XVI had to do was put cannons in front of the Bastille and give the mob, as he put it, a whiff of grape shot.
Hmm.
And the revolution would have been nipped in the bud.
Well, yeah.
Of course, you know, Louis XVI wasn't a strong monarch.
Yeah. So, Richard, he's not talking in contradiction to... Oop, he's gone. Okay, Dennis, Chattanooga, very quickly, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for taking my call, and God bless you and your guests there for speaking out. I just wanted to make these comments quickly. Yeah, we can see what's going on in this country, and this Marxist movement has got to be stopped. I want to make this comment about FOMO in New York City. One of the last things I heard last night on Fox News, and I didn't get to hear the rest of it, was the fact that Cuomo is being considered for the attorney general
yeah.
if Biden gets in there. How do you like that?
Yeah, we just
mentioned.
Also,
I want to remind all of your listeners, which I am a senior citizen, and my wife is, who are drawing their Social Security. If they want to lose it, they need to vote for Biden. If they want to keep it, they better not.
Dennis, thank you for your comments. So you've got the last 30 seconds, Don. What do you want to leave with the listeners?
Well, you know, it's become a cliche, and it's been repeated endlessly during the COVID epidemic. We're all in this together. But when it comes to confronting the revolution in the streets and stopping it, we really are all in this together.
Very interesting thought. Don Feder, our guest here today, thank you for your column. Thank you for helping to wake up this nation. And thank you also for carving out the time to join us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Again, folks, you can read his columns at frontpagemag.com. He's written on this and a whole lot more. But certainly, as one caller mentioned here earlier, we need to be praying for this nation as well. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.